Summer Pasture opens with scenes of what I would call a rodeo. It's very much a mix of old and new. What do you recall most vividly about that event?
That's actually a really good description of that opening scene. It sort of seeming like a rodeo. The way we kind of experienced it, or you know, our first impressions were that it did feel kind of like a county fair. My family is actually from Cheyenne, Wyoming, my father's side, so I'd actually been to a number of rodeos growing up, and that's really what it does feel like. But even more so than I think the typical or some of the rodeos I had been to in the States, this one had a much more chaotic feel. There are so many different games and contests and kind of performances going on all the time, and I think the audience is, you know, this is something that happens on an annual basis, but everyone really looks forward to it. So really all the, you know, community members come out from the town, and it's a really, you know, kind of special event.
The family, wife Yama and husband Locho and their baby daughter, who are at the heart of this film, are nomadic herders. Would you tell us a little bit about the daily routine of their lives in summer?
Sure. Well, summer is their most busy and productive season. You know, they are at kind of the season of the year that has sort of the nicest weather. You know, it's the warmest, even though that doesn't mean it's particularly balmy all the time. As you see in the film, it's raining and snowing and sleeting, you know, fairly consistently. But the weather does permit them to produce the most out of their yaks, which are their primary means of survival. So the yaks are at their most productive. You know, the milk is the richest, so they're saving up butter and cheese and all these dairy products that they'll use throughout the fall and winter months. So this basically means that Yama, who is the female member of the family and pretty much the main producer, she will rise every day around 3:30 in the morning and start her daily chores. And so that includes milking the yaks, collecting fresh yak dung, which she will spread out into kind of these thin globes on the ground and let it dry in the sun, when she'll eventually rake it up and they'll use that to light their fire. She's taking care of the baby. She's making the meals. She's spinning and weaving yak hair for the fabric they use for their tent and other items. So her day starts at 3:30 and it ends usually around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And most of the time, Locho, the husband, is tending to the yaks, herding, taking them to fresh grass areas, and basically watching over them.
Their lives are so different from my life, yet I am so drawn to them because of things we share, our ups and downs, laughter and heartbreak. How do audiences respond to the film?
Very much so, like you just described. I think people have really related to this family as, in many ways, a very typical family, like, you know, our own families or families that we know right next door. They're a young couple. In the film, Locho is 30 and Yama's 27 years old, and their baby is 5.5 months. And so, like many couples, they struggle with, you know, getting the baby to bed and feeding her and comforting her while also carrying on very busy work lives during the day. So I think a lot of the reaction from audiences we found is just as you described. They really feel like they can relate to the trials and tribulations of being a couple and forging a marriage and also taking care of a young child when you have, you know, work responsibilities.
What do they think of the film?
We've only heard their reactions through our co-filmmaker, Tsering Perlo, who's actually living in Tibet right now, and so he's in better contact with him than we are. But we did send back a rough cut of the film when we were finishing the editing of it a year ago, and Perlo showed it to them out in the pasture, and so we got an email back saying that they apparently loved it. And especially Yama, I guess, noted that she was really pleased and proud that people saw how hard she worked.
You shot the film in the summer of 2007, so it's 2010 now, so all is well with Yama and Locho. And
yes, we actually just got some photographs emailed to us of the family about a month ago, and we were just thrilled to see how healthy they look. Yama's had a second child since we last saw them, and she does suffer from a very challenging illness, so we were really glad to know that she was able to have this other child and still seems to be in, you know, decent health, although she does have this chronic illness. It doesn't make things easy for her, but they do sound like they're doing really well, and apparently Locho has taken over a herd of yaks that had been for sale by another nomad who had decided to sell off his herd and move into town, which is one of the kind of themes in the film. And so apparently they've effectively doubled the size of their herd since we last saw them.
Yeah. Locho told you he started herding yaks when he was 6 years old. His mother had died, and his grandmother told him he would not be going to school. Yama at one time thought she would be a nun. Today, how do they feel about their way of life? They've added to the herd.
Yes, I think that in the film, when they do go into sort of their hopes and dreams for themselves and sort of, you know, looking back at their own lives, they do express the desire to have maybe explored other lifestyles. You know, as Yama does say, she had wanted to be a nun. But I think, you know, those things come up in the interview, but we felt very... it seemed very clear to us that they are very proud of their lifestyle. And as much as they might kind of talk about or dream about other things, they are very solidly committed to this way of life. And, you know, they're very good at it. So I think that their main interest in exploring other ways of living are really only to benefit their children. When they see the environment around them changing and these other opportunities arising, and I think they realize that the life that they've had is going to be very different from the one that their children are going to be, you know, having to address. And so they do want to send their children to school, you know, just to be able to basically compete in, you know, these new sort of modern, the new modern context.
It's hard for me to imagine this couple living a life without animals.
Sorry, without animals?
Without animals.
Oh, yes. The animals are central. They're everything. The yaks are everything to them. You know, they serve as transportation when they move among the different pastures they live in throughout the year. You know, they sell the hair from the yaks to receive cash for some of the supplies they need to buy in town. They use the yak hair itself for all the ropes and the fabric they need for their tents and their... you know, different saddle things and bridle ropes and, you know, I mean, everything they use pretty much are things that they make from the yak, you know, the food they eat. So it really is completely central to their lives.
Hmm. What is it like for them to go to town?
Well, the experience in town apparently is changed in the last few years. Locho is the one who goes into town, so the men are the ones responsible for... going into town and bartering or selling and buying the few supplies that they do need to purchase from the shopkeepers. And it's a challenge. I think that the language is a bit difficult. I think that shopkeepers and Tibetan herders like Locho have found some kind of common way of communicating numbers and basics. But the shopkeepers that we noticed Locho confronting, it's definitely a tense situation, and there's a lot of push and pull, and you know, even 1 yuan, which is, you know, a very small amount of money to us, means everything to someone like Locho, whose family typically functions on, you know, maybe a few hundred dollars a year in U.S. terms.
When you arrived in Tibet, did you have any idea of what you'd find? Did you have a narrative in mind?
We didn't have a narrative. We had been to the Kham region before on a previous trip. We had not been to Zatchika, the specific area where we shot the film, but we had been, you know, generally introduced to this area of the world, and we were interested in the nomadic culture that we had seen on that previous trip. So our only goal or expectation was that we wanted to make some kind of project that had to do with a typical nomad family, and you know what that would mean. We didn't really have any plans around, but my partners and I, we're really interested in, you know, personal stories and allowing those experiences then speak to any of the larger kind of issues that might be related. But we really wanted to keep it to a very personal level.
Yeah, you're really out of the picture. So has there been any interest from anyone in television around the world, here in the U.S., in Europe, in Asia?
Well, actually, the rights, the U.S. television rights to the film are held by PBS, who we have a co-production deal with. So they had helped us with some early funding, and in exchange, they actually own the film. And so we are waiting to hear what specific program in PBS might pick it up for programming in, say, the 2011 or 12 season. Outside of the States, we haven't heard anything yet, but we're really hopeful. We have a distributor who's working on our behalf and traveling to international film festivals and markets. And, you know, it would actually be our dream if something like this was able to be screened on Chinese television, which obviously has a huge audience, you know, huge numbers in terms of audience, but more so I just think that this is a film about a very, you know, typical Tibetan family that I'm sure many people even in China aren't quite familiar with.
Well, I'm so happy that it will be screened here in Champaign-Urbana. And I guess there we'll wrap it up. Lynn, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
My pleasure.